100.
Hardware Trojaner and security
this talk is about hardware Trojans and security chips, so not the software kind of Trojans that the police is using. The guys next to me, Peters and Markus, have been researching for years on smart cards, and both work for Infineon, but they're here on a private notice. Okay, welcome them.
Ja, vielen Dank und herzlich
willkommen. And welcome to our talk on hardware Trojans and security chips. As promised, we immediately go to the dark side.
Ganz kurz zu unserer Person.
We first want to introduce ourselves. Thank you for the introduction. We have been active in this area since 1989. We've been working on chip cards. We started in Brunsbüttel, a small city pretty close to here, on the German telephone card. It was pretty new, and we always wanted to know what happens with all the gold wires in the card. Are the credits stored on the card? Around 1991, so 2 years later, we have held our first talk on the CCC. This was a lot smaller than here, but it was already a lot of fun. In our studies in university, he was in Hamburg, I was in Kiel. We continued working on this topic, and we found one or two leaks, and we've been researching on that topic ever since. As already announced, we are still working in that area professionally.
Ja, für einen Halbleiterhersteller,
bei dem among others at a semiconductor manufacturer called Infineon, but we still do private research. At the moment, we're interested in the surplus market for equipment, with which we do research and also try to manufacture strong tools. And now we
start with the next subject, the hardware Trojans. Software Trojans are well known, everybody knows about them, so we want to talk more about the hardware Trojans. They are usually overlooked, especially in the literature and also in the public. Hardware Trojans also have two aims, the first to exfiltrate data and also to infiltrate things. Exfiltrate is something everybody thinks about, so if you have a software Trojan and he wants to have credit card numbers, so he wants to get them out of the system, or also the Bundes Trojans. Who export private data into the systems of the police. There are also other things that might be exfiltrated. For example, cryptographical keys. When you have encrypted data news on the system and you catch them, you may want to look at the key on the chip to decrypt the data afterwards. Or even worse, the receipts for random number generators. Nowadays, random numbers are not really random. They're not really purely random, but they're used with seed numbers, and you'd run pseudo-random number generators with that. If you know the pseudo-random number generator and the seed value, you will know which is the next random number, and that can be used to harm encryption. And otherwise, it can also be software. If you want to exfiltrate code and run code dump on them, something that is not looked at more often is infiltration. So a Trojan infiltrates a system that is reasonably well known in software. So to introduce malware is something a Trojan may be used for, but also other data or parameters can be infiltrated. Wrong parameters for industrial computers or well-known bad security values. If a system uses an encryption method that is known for the attacker, that's also interesting. And furthermore, there are also ethical problems about that. The kompromat, the evidence against a company or a person might be also put onto the systems. And people who use the system or maybe cross a border with it might get real big problems by that. Also, next to Trojans, there are also the words backdoor and backdoor. So sometimes they are mixed up. So here we want to talk about those words, what they are about. They are always. You can always think about them as on the historical background of the Trojan horse. So it's a vehicle with a payload. So the door opens, the soldiers go in, and the users get the door into their system like, hey, cool, it's a free app. It's a free horse in this case, and once it's inside the city or the system, the payload turns off the security features or the guards and then opens the door for the rest of the army, and that's the back door. The Trojan horse moves and controls the back door. So that was the real use of it, but nowadays it's often misused, so we won't be that strong about it. Another word is the bug door, coming from bug and door. It's just bad programming. For example, backdoors in a software that have been used by a developer to do changes, but they have never been removed. And there are many of those. There is another question: where can those Trojans or backdoors be found? Where are they from? The most important thing about them is that Trojans always work in the system. The system is where the Trojans do their work, no matter where they're from. Sometimes they even switch their places. The system always, or the systems we talk about, is always made up by software and hardware. In the software, the programming of a Trojan is quite simple, and everybody who knows something about programming is able to, if he works sufficiently long about it, to write a Trojan. And it's not that hard to implement it. However, there's also a disadvantage. They are usually easy to find. Everybody who can disassemble the software and try to understand the software, he will notice that something is wrong there. And once he finds that, he can really relatively simple prove what the Trojan is actually doing. So there are works and papers about how to find out what Trojans do and how they work. Otherwise, hardware Trojans is different. Not only the hardware is changed, but also the software hardware itself. For example, the chip is changed. The functionality of a chip is different, and to implement it, it's really hard, it's quite expensive, and it's not that easy to hide compared to others in the development of those devices. But on the other hand, the attacker has advantages. For example, the identification is really quite hard. If you have a hardware Trojan and really want to identify it, you have to usually reverse engineer a chip and look at the chip really carefully. And even if you do that, sometimes the question is a certain hardware function. What does it really do? Is it really active, or is it maybe just a sleeping functionality that has never been used and will never be used? And therefore the proof is quite complicated. So when we want to look at how hard it is to create a hardware Trojan, we have to first of all look at how these chips are created. Once you know how these chips are created, you can look at where you can put in a train. So here, basically, how a chip is created. On the left, it begins with the hardware description language, in this case, VHDL. VHDL is a programming language like for software. However, you write directly hardware, like program, and it has the function what the hardware should do. Maybe a CPU. If you've used an FPGA, you know that quite well. Once the VHDL, when the code is ready, you put it like software code into a compiler, and the compiler creates a layout. All the functionalities are connected with each other like a normal layout for a PCB. And oh, what's the second step? Sorry, it's first compiled and then turned into a layout, and that. The layout shows how it's all connected, and that's what's similar to a printed circuit board. The different colors are metal lines on different layers. Once you're there and you want to create a chip, you have to create it into turn it into an optical system. You see some masks here. Masks are quartz glass slides, and on these quartz glass slides, chrome is put on, and there are small structures inside of it, and that's an optical mask to create the single layers of a chip in a raw silicium crystal. You need a dozen of so masks, and when you've used them one after the other, you create the wafer, and on the wafer there are all the chips, and you only have to saw that apart or use lasers to take it apart to get these single chips.
It's of course the question, where's the Trojan hidden? That means we see here that there are way more steps to create the hardware instead of the software. So there are way more possibilities to implement the Trojan. So, and it's really the possibility that you can implement a Trojan in every step of the process. You can implement in VHDL in layout or in the mask. So what can you do in the layout? VHDL, there's the function written out, so I can just add a couple of lines of code to add the Trojan functionality. That means a Trojan can be directly implemented in VHDL. It can be directly implemented and then be moved into the layout in the mask and then in the hardware part. You see the implementation is pretty easy in that step, but also it's pretty easy to find if you review the code. If you look at the functions and what the code is actually doing, so pretty much everybody will find it. And on top of that, the VHDL code is being processed and reviewed by a bunch of people, and so the chance increases that it's going to be found. So if you now write a VHDL code without a Trojan, then you can add in a step of the layout the Trojan. You see in the sample the electric wire up in the different colors, and with a special layout program, we can add, we can move the electrical connections and add new elements to it, and change the element, the wire up, so a Trojan is implemented. By looking at this, you see it's a lot harder to implement a Trojan on this step because you have to change a lot of parts. And it's nothing you do something like on the side and we just add a couple lines of code. It's a really hard work and you have to work a lot. But the advantage of that is that you have the really small chance that somebody will discover it because who looks at the layout? So when you form from the layout to the mask, you can also add in the mask a Trojan. So when you add structures on the mask, which are going to build the product, you can add there a couple things that implements a Trojan. You can use.
This, of course, is a bit of a problem. But you can't just scratch the code into the masks. What you have to do is you basically have to create them from scratch. And seeing that, it's obviously a lot harder than it was in the step before. And you cannot just change the code. You also need the tools to actually create this. So still, the detection of the Trojan is actually a lot harder. It's pretty hard to actually check the masks itself. You have to verify by comparing it with the layout and what would be generated from that, and hope that it hasn't changed in the meantime. So yeah, the detection is actually pretty hard. So this concludes the methods of how to implement the Trojan in hardware. But you can also see the detection is only normally, or in the usual case, easy, middle, or hard, because there are certain situations that we call the snake oil cases where introducing a Trojan is harder or easier, or rather easy to introduce and hard to detect. Snake oil is something that is praised as having good characteristics and that could have a dangerous side effect that you can't really see through, and you put this in good wittingly, hoping that it has some good natured effect, but you cannot oversee the side effects. Maybe these features also have very small side effects in the process of production. So let's have a look at what happens if you add it at the very beginning of the process. Let's say that this VHDL code is not short, but rather pretty complex, and where you add a piece that you cannot really see through. It's not something you can just read. Of course, it's a lot easier here to just add new functionality that you wouldn't expect. So obviously the detection, given the complexity of the code, is also a lot harder. Is this only theory? Well, from software world, we know the white box cryptography.
Nutzt ja gerade möglichst komplexe Softwarecodes, da
already uses the most complex software code you can have in order to hide cryptographic keys in a piece of software, and you try to hide them in the best way possible using white box cryptography. The codes in there are so complex that you can't really understand them anymore. So if we transfer this to the hardware, this might also be possible. What if the VHDL code is a lot more complex than we basically show it? Looking through these complex functions is, of course, harder, and therefore it's easier to introduce Trojans that are harder to detect. Even if it's not at the very beginning of the processing chain, but rather later, they can still make it easier to introduce it.
Begünstigen, dass man zu einem späten Prozessschritt entsprechend noch Veränderungen vornimmt.
So that you can make changes later. Maybe they just help with the introduction. Let's say we have a snake oil feature being put into the VHDL code that is supposed to make the chip safer, but maybe it actually, in reality, helps with adding a new mask set to compromise the chip in a way that you can control them easily. What could this look like? Well, a practical example would be the physically unclonable functions. They have a high risk of being manipulated. With the physically unclonable functions, with the SRAM physically unclonable functions, that uses internal memory,
it could,
when turning on, make some of the cells tend to flip their content to zero or to one.
So
it would do the same thing on every booting of the system. And you have a reproducible pattern, and you can try to deduce cryptographical keys from this behavior.
This is easily manipulable if you add a mask in the manufacturing process. You can add with them. You can change the SRAM bytes with a special math, so they. Manipulate the probability that they flip to zero or one. And the change is that I know what is more likely, and somebody that looks at the chip and doesn't know that I manipulated it doesn't know about it. And that shows how complicated it is to find such Trojans. Similar method is when you, it's called camouflage chip designs. It's not normal cell. It's a logical element in the layout. It's built into the layout and is can be defined later on in the process. The same is with the
programming. If the programming just happens in the last step with the mask, you can later on add another mask and change the usability how the chip works so that your Trojan is inside of there. So next to the normal ways you can implement a Trojan into a chip, many more exist, like the snake oil features make the introduction significantly easier, and sometimes they're really hard to detect. Sometimes you think, hey, the hardware Trojan sometimes has to communicate with the outside world. Well, we see there are many, many backdoors that can be used to communicate. For example, in protocols or in side channels that might usually compare to side channel attacks, purposefully exports information. Otherwise, it might be chip modification, so physically change the chip, or fault introductions. These many ways the backdoors can be used or started is quite interesting, as we'll talk about a few of them. Here we chose some examples that are publicated, because we don't want to hint the security services on these new informations, but we want to show you how these protocols can be misused to exfiltrate data. The best known, you also know by software Trojans, is that undocumented orders or orders are accepted or a general key is integrated. So by that, the data or the code cannot be, isn't that secure. Another method well known from the security, from the software way, is bad cryptographic algorithm. So they know which backdoors are chosen, and he knows how to choose that cryptography, how to attack them. So he knows how to extract the secret keys and knows how to read the internal data. Another scenario which has not been communicated that well is watermarking. Watermarking everybody knows, for example, from videos or images or audio files. When they are transmitted, there is it says where the file is from. But what happens if the chip exfiltrates a large amount of data, and a watermarking, steganographic, adds additional information in the output? If anybody who does not know how to get these data out of it, will never find out whether that's the normal data or maybe there are a few chips changed, bits changed inside of it, over which information is exfiltrated from the chip. And especially this knowledge is what's changed by with side channel attacks. For example, if I look at the power profile or the electromagnetic emissions, I can simply see, yes, that chip looks pretty random, or, oh, that looks like maybe that's due to the functionality. However, somebody who has implemented this backdoor specifically knows that at certain times the power usage of the electromagnetic field has to be looked at and knows and figures out how the informations can be seen. For example, the amplitude, how much power was used or how much electromagnetic fields was emitted. So it's quite hard to see, to notice that there's additional information. Even more complicated is with light emissions. You might know that if a transistor is switched 10,000 times, also a photon is created, an infrared photon, and you can measure it or record it with special cameras, so you know where is activity in a chip, where are there a lot of transistors that switch. However, if you have a special backdoor, you could manipulate an element that it sends photons more often, or more interesting, you know exactly at which point, where is the transistor that I have to look at, and Morse information, like with a torch, the data outside. The same way you can measure the signal level on different lines. Maybe you have listened to our chip 25 years chip card attacks. With an electronic raster microscope, you can read the signals on different lines. So if you look at the complete chip, you can see a lot of signals on different lines. But someone who may use this line specifically may have put a line in an upper layer, and he knows all the significant data runs through this one line, and he can read all the data on this line and with an electron beam. And he can thereby exfiltrate all the data into an analyzing system. How many different ways there are is that even the temperature can be used. Here there's also new sources that at a multi-core system, at one chip, at one processor, there's a lot of work, and the work on the other core is changed or influenced. There's even a publication where two PCs run next to one another. At one PC, there's a lot of calculation, and at the other, the internal temperature sensor is monitored, and you can see without having contact to the other move data. Of course, that's really, really slow because the temperature changes really slow. You may get a couple of bits per second. However, even so, some side channels like that can be used. Even more interesting are manipulating backdoors. Who doesn't know that in a chip, if you look at it, maybe there are not just the connected pins, but even additional contacts, where in the data sheet it just says NC or non-connected or for future use. And nobody knows what's behind them, if they're really not connected, or maybe a future functionality, maybe a debug method or other functionalities you can communicate with the chip over. And those contacts, and not only those contacts can be used, but also in the implementation you might create a special line on the chip, and if you remove it with a laser beam that can also be bought on a used hardware market quite cheaply, you can enable the additional functionality, and suddenly, only after the manipulation, after the physical manipulation, the chip can be communicated with. And even memory cells, like the RAM we just talked about, the physical and clonable functions, can be used by ion implementation or changed using ion implementation or changed the functionality of the chip. In the last case, error induction can also be used to communicate with the joint through the backdoor and give him information. For example, you could turn on, shine a laser on different functions or in different elements, and in the end, it's just a solar cell. So the laser creates a small amount of power in the chip and switch something on or off. You just cannot connect to this functionality from the outside without knowing exactly where to point the laser to.
What is known widely is that memory is added with safety features. When you download something on a microcontroller, a safety bit is set, and so it is meant that you can't get the information out of the memory chip. Now, if you're the designer, you maybe know where you can shine the ultraviolet light to deactivate the safety bit and to then access the
backdoor.
It's possible that this is actually a backdoor, so just bad design or just a mishap. But it could also be on purpose as a backdoor. So the designer knows exactly that if I want this particular piece of data, I have to delete this particular cell and memory with UV light in order to get the data out. Very interesting, but also pretty complicated issue is the random number generation. They are used for securing cryptographic functions, and it needs randomness. It needs to randomize the behavior of the algorithm, but it, of course this can't work if from the outside you can influence the way this random number generator works, or if you can actually set particular values. It's possible, for example, that if you put on a electromagnetic field or a radio frequency and change the internal random number generation, that you can have particular values as output, or just have at least predictable numbers. If someone knows exactly how this backdoor works, then you can just use it to defeat the randomness and therefore have predictable random numbers. We know that often they introduce sensors. They're meant to help against certain things like detecting light radiation or similar things. And who says that they just cover the whole spectrum and the whole space around the object, and not just part of it where it's so that you have a blind spot where you cannot detect what is going on? This could be used in order to have implantation of errors and particular values. You can already see around the topic of backdoors, there's a lot of different methods that you can use to implement them in hardware, a lot more than you can have in the software. There is different ways of communicating, different ways of getting data out, implementing them. An especially grave problem is the interfaces for analysis or debugging. They're actually meant to do some analysis on the hardware. For example, here there's a backdoor or an interface for detecting how the hard drive is broken or if it's broken anyway. Maybe you can fix it by flashing a new firmware. But obviously you can misuse it in order to get data directly out or adding firmware. Adding Trojans into the firmware. Even bigger is the area of the JTAG ports that you have on a lot of devices and that are usually not secured in any way. For example, here you have a wireless LAN router where you can just flash a new firmware with a Trojan onto the board by using the JTAG. If you think a little further, what happens if you have a security chip, like a TPM module or something, and you have a JTAG interface? Of course, if the chip actually fails, then you can try to repair it or at least get back the data that I put in. But obviously, that's exactly what you wouldn't want. A security chip should please keep the data safe and not just make them accessible again on the port. So, especially on security chips, analysis interfaces, or especially JTAG ports, are a really bad idea. So, we now show you how you can actually have this implemented on an easy to understand example. This is a small kind of telescopic a device in a door. You can have a look through it and see who is on the outside. Before you open the door, you look through it and you see, do you know the person or not? So obviously this is a good thing to have, but it can also be abused. For example, in the fourth picture, if you put on a special kind of optic device to reverse the mechanism, so you don't just see a very small point, but rather because of this optics you use, you can actually spy into the whole room behind it. Who's in the flat? Who is there? Is there someone? What does it look like? This is a good example, or at least we think so, how a pretty well-meant feature could actually be used as a backdoor. In the 90s, end of the 90s, it was pretty clear that sometime after the software Trojans, the hardware Trojans would come. And during that time, we already made collected some ideas of what you could do in order to minimize the risk and prevent them from happening. We tried to prove the hardware to make it safe. In order to get closer to the actual issues, we tried to think about what are the reasons that you would want to put this in for, and is it on purpose or not? And we have four categories. The first one is malicious intent. You see on the first picture, when you have malicious intent, of course, you first think about sabotage, blackmail, political motives. For example, a system is already in the field and the manufacturer is being blackmailed that with a certain command you could just make them fail or something. But it could also be political motives, like, for example, a dictator wants to take a closer look at his subjects and just monitor their communication, and in order to do that he would introduce a Trojan. On the other side of the spectrum, you have the good intent. They still do it on purpose. Well, we already think about service interfaces, debugging, maybe even customer support. For example, customer support asking you, well, do you want this stuff to be repaired for you, or maybe we can get your data out? Of course, also here, there is political intent. Of course, now we have to replace the mean dictator by maybe a good monarch who wants to protect his citizenship. Then we have two more categories. They are not on purpose, or there's no active. It wasn't done on purpose. We call them ignorance and idiocy. We separated them on purpose. With the ignorance, the consequences are at least partially known when you're doing the design. It could be, for example, you're being pressed for time and you don't have the time to just take the debugging interface out. You know that it's not secured, but you don't have the time, so you just leave it in. Yeah, well, of course, you try to rationalize it for yourself, then it's not going to be that bad, you just leave it in. Or someone tells you that you have to do it and you just don't think about it. You don't speak up, but you just trust the person who says, leave it in. And then the last one is idiocy. We used a pretty harsh word for it, but it wasn't. We just wanted to make clear. We call it functional idiocy. The systems we build these days are pretty complex, and there's in part even hundreds and more developers that work together, and no one knows quite exactly how they all work together and how the cogs fit in the system. It's often not known, and there's blank spots.
And we have already shown ways where a pretty good idea actually has really bad, it leads to really bad problems. Another interesting point is, what can we do about that? And here we also looked at some three categories. So first, to talk, communicate it with to force them externally or internally. And here with the green and gray sides, you can see how helpful they are. The first one is the teaching. So it helps with stupidity and ignorance, but against bad intentions, it doesn't help at all. If you say someone, hey, that's a really bad idea about the to do that at the company, and if the saboteur will put it in. But that's really important. The technology, technological purposes, is independent of what the person, the attacker wants. It makes it harder to implement backdoors and Trojans generally, but on the left and the right side, we did not put it there completely because those tools are with intention, and if someone really wants to do it, he will look at which technological measures are used and tries to figure out how to circumvent those security features. And in the last case, to require them to do it properly, internally or externally or everybody himself, and they're quite differently important. It sometimes works more or less good. But here's some more information about the possibilities. What can everybody do who is in part of one of these areas in the implementation or the analyzing or the testing? So first, teach them about the technical features. Security should always be a feature. Debugs if interfaces are not good for security chips, they mustn't be used. Not for your own development or error checking, they don't fit in. And last but not least, developers usually don't think like hackers. They are constructive. And that means that Usually your own results, you look and you look at them and you really trust them. And an attack or a security or Pinterest is assumed as an attack on this, the own person. And everybody who works in the IT security area knows that that you have to create a constructive atmosphere where you work to the betterment of the product. Political aspects are also an aspect. Here, the Frankenstein effect, if you actually have a drone in the praxis, it's uncontrollable. You don't know what's going to happen about it, who's going to use it. And sometimes it's even about the person who really uses it. In the history book, we see that political situations can change. In this case, it's not that important, but in one country. But if it's sold in different countries, maybe one of those might get a different leader in the next month or years. And furthermore, there are the ethical aspects. Backdoors can bring people in deadly danger, especially if you think about Kompromats, where someone with top secret information they have on their keys and they're thereby connected, stopped at the border, and that's a real problem. And as always, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So there are some technological help against Trojans and backdoors that can be used prophylactic. So first of all, don't use technologies that may be used within backdoors. If you notice them, or if you notice that a technology uses it, that might be used for backdoors, don't use it in security chips. Furthermore, the design must be chosen in such a way that changes appear, that if someone changes something, it will be noticed that something is wrong. Because the changes that have to be done are larger than what you normally would have if there's snake oil in the design. There are similar things in the about technological, about technology. There are also two other options. First of all, self-test of chips, and furthermore, the recognition after the chips is manufactured. With a self-chip test, it might be reasonably helpful. So a chip, before there's a really critical chip, runs a test operation and checks whether everything is all right, whether the chip is not the keys are not changed. And after all these chips, the tests are run, the chip, only after all these checks are done, the chip will do its own the security relevant thing. But these might be also interfered by an internal person. But that makes it much more important, and you may need more people, which is also always a problem. With the finding, by looking at them afterwards, we are more skeptical. Sometimes others have looked at it, and they looked at maybe the power consumption curves of the chip, but you have to be really careful about that. Usually, the spectres are created in such a way that they are not always active, and furthermore, especially with security chips and security hardware, the power consumption is chosen randomly to reduce the chance of power analysis attacks. Therefore, to recognize a manipulation on a ready chip is really hard. There's another option, and it's also creative, is to make everybody sign that they will not create a backdoor. For example, nowadays you see that people who want to create such a chip look at who creates them, what history they may have, who owns the company, where is the main seat of the company located. How can other parties influence these companies? And it's really good to see that. Furthermore, laws and rules, the data protection laws, are quite nice, but who controls them and who looks that everything is done according to those laws? And you have to check with the reality, where are they value in space or in a different country? And furthermore, the self, that's not that bad. The creator himself, the company that creates the chips, promises not to create to create backdoors and trojans. What happens there is that there is an additional problem if the chip creator, although he promised not to change it, to implement backdoors, it will have negative consequences for him. And that additional risk, economical risk, is that the developer himself within in the development processes will look at it more closely that no backdoors are created or just happen. So the tests might be better or the evaluations are better, so the influence, it's harder to influence it. So that's all good, but why should creator go towards that risk? But nowadays, even there, the situation changes. It changes slowly. The developers, the manufacturers who go ahead with that sometimes have more chip cells.
But of course, there's always the question what producers and manufacturers are doing that, and we're hoping that more will follow and commit to that cause. So we come to the end of our presentation. We have a couple of book recommendations and literature recommendations. We here have a couple books from 1991 from Computers and Trojans, where there's talk about Trojans and the concepts of them. And there's also one from December where everyone can check, that everybody can check out who got time. With that, we want to wish you lots of fun for your own research, and we're open for questions. And tomorrow we're going to be at our assembly, and everybody that wants to come by and talk with us, we're open to it. Thank you a lot.
Vielen Dank. Also, ihr habt gehört, ihr habt jetzt ein paar Minuten,
Fragen zu stellen. You hear there are a couple minutes to ask your questions. Please line up at the microphones. Everyone that leaves, please be quiet.
Gibt's irgendwelche Fragen?
Are there any questions?
Ah, das ist Anna.
There's one.
Ah, dort hinten erkenne ich jemanden an Mikrofon 3.
At microphone 3. Okay, so I want to ask, you can secure software really, really good by proving that it fits the specifications. Are there any movements or programs that enforce that for the hardware level?
Yeah, of course, there's the attempt to see if there's a non-intentional feature, and there's different ansatzes, but to be fair, it's pretty tough to be complete about the whole process. As we already saw during the manufacturing process at the very end, during the masking set, where you can only check the mask or the finished product, this is pretty tough. It's very hard to actually try and figure out if that's the intention. Yes, there are different answers, but by no means they're complete.
Mikro 4, bitte.
Microphone 4, please. Hey.
Ich hätte die Frage,
I have the question, what is the work that you have to do if you want to inject a mask into an application process? What has a single developer to do In my imagination, it's really, really difficult to add another structure into different lasers that you would that when you create something in your mask that you inject, that you influence other layers.
Yeah, also als Antwort.
Trying to avoid Trojans, the further you go towards the mask, the harder it gets, the more effort you have to put in. And of course, if you put it into the VHDL at the very beginning, and that is very easy, the further you go in the production process, the harder it gets. And the tricky bit is you have to avoid technologies that make it easy to tamper with the design. For example, think about the RAM cells. The RAM cell doesn't really care if the driver of the cell is a little stronger or a little weaker. They just work.
So
for example, if you use the physically unclonable functions and try to deduct something from the memory cell, you won't notice this, that someone has manipulated, but if it's something vital that the chip actually uses and that may never go wrong, then it's really hard.
So,
for a start, it's really important to throw out anything that makes it easier to put them in. And of course, you're right. In fact, it's pretty hard, but if you use the wrong technologies, it actually gets a lot easier. And that's the real problem with this.
So, die Zeit ist leider knapp.
Okay, so we're at the last question from the internet because we're short on time. The question is, have you actually found evil Trojans like that were implemented as a Trojan and not as a debug interface?
Yes, indeed. There have been several examples where, for example, the hardware random number generators have been tampered with. And the random number wasn't random at all anymore, but could rather be influenced. And yes, there have been actual real-world examples where this has been used.
Are there any names for those? No dialogues, please.
Vielen Dank.
So, thank you a lot. You can applaud, but we're not taking any more questions. You have been listening to Hardware Triana.